After leading games 4 and 5 by 18 and 26 points each respectively, the Sixers eventually choked and lost both games and now find themselves heading back to Atlanta State Farm Arena for a pivotal game 6 down 3-2. Today's episode is brought to you by Big E. To another episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia. Along with Alec Leipsch, I am Kenny Adkins, and the series is far from over. The Sixers still have a chance to come back, but what we've seen over the past two games is some of the most discouraging stuff I've ever seen from a Philadelphia sports team in general, but certainly from the Sixers team that we have put so much faith in this year.
I don't even know where to begin, man. This is... I think in the Simmons and Embiid era, this is the worst loss given the expectations, the pressure, and the opponent. The Sixers are a considerably better team than the Hawks, and they were up 25 as late as 3 minutes left to go in the third quarter of this game, which means that they blew a 25-point lead in 15 minutes, and they gave up 51 points over those last 15 minutes. It's worse than any of the Celtics losses. It's worse than the Kawhi shot. So there, it's the worst loss in the Simmons and Embiid era.
Yeah, I think this is far and away worse than the Kawhi loss. I don't care if you take the circumstances of the Kawhi shot into consideration. When you combine last night's game, Wednesday night's game, with game four, the fact that the Sixers were ahead and had that game seemingly in hand, ultimately to let the Hawks come back without even putting up much of a fight and lose the game, and now find themselves in a hole where they need to win two straight before they lose one or else the series is over. This is a really, really tough time to root for this team and defend this team and the players on it, not named Seth Curry and Joel Embiid. Particularly talk about game five. They got 37 and 36 from Joel and Seth Curry, respectively. Losing a game that you get 36 points from Seth Curry is obscene. And that's not even talking about the 25-point lead they held. The Sixers were dominating the entire game, and they got up to a certain point where they just stopped. The entire second half was a disaster. The only two Sixers that made a field goal in the entire second half were Joel Embiid and Seth Curry. That, to me, is a crazier stat than when the Rockets missed 27 threes in a row a couple years ago. Two players on the entire team made a field goal in the second half. In the last 12 and a half minutes of game time, the Sixers got outscored like 46 to 17 or something. That just can't happen. The biggest game of the season. Tobias Harris shrinks, nowhere to be found. 2 of 11 shooting for 4 points. Ben Simmons misses 10 free throws in the game. In a game the Sixers lose by 3. In a game the Sixers had in hand well into the third quarter and heading into the fourth even. It's just a complete, complete disaster today. Looking back at these past two games and what we've seen from this team, absolutely no fight, absolutely no willingness to lock it down and get the W when they needed to. And to make matters worse, they lost game five at home in front of the home crowd, able to take a pivotal 3-2 game lead. They choked the opportunity away in spectacular fashion. I think it's one of the worst playoff losses of any sport I've ever seen, at least.
There's really not much else. I mean, they put up a wonderful first half. The Hawks had a tough time getting to 40 points in the first 24 minutes of that contest. And that was on the backs of Embiid playing a masterful game on both ends. And in the second half, he just could not keep it up for various reasons. One of them being the Sixers kind of stopped going to his post offense. For the second straight game, they deviated from something that was working really well. Embiid's post-ups have actually been excellent this series. And the rest of the team kind of just laid off the gas. and they opened the door for the Hawks. They kept that door ajar, and the Hawks just burst right through it. They finished the game, the last like 7 minutes, with Trae Young and Lou Williams both on the floor, two massive defensive weaknesses. And somehow Tobias Harris or an Embiid and freaking Simmons, which we could spend the whole episode on him if you want, none of them could find a mismatch. None of them could expose either of those two undersized guards in that lineup. And this is a problem that we knew was going to happen in this playoffs, about the Sixers being able to create offense when it's kind of when you just need somebody to ad lib it, to be an alchemist kind of thing. But we didn't expect it this early, man. The Hawks are not that good. Of the eight teams that made it to the second round, I'd say they're the worst one, just like how the Wizards were the worst team that the Sixers played in the first round. And time and time again in this series, the Sixers have just let the Hawks in. I mean, they blew game one. Game one was a freaking just I'm even more mad about that one retroactively, because they could have been up 3-0. But, man, where do you want to start? Who do you want to pick apart first?
Well, I think we have to start with Ben Simmons. I especially, and I know you as well, we have defended Ben Simmons for his entire tenure with the Philadelphia 76ers. The whole issue with Ben Simmons has never been his lack, in my opinion, has never been his lack of a jump shot, his unwillingness to take those shots outside the paint. It's the fact that he doesn't have a set of repeatable post moves. He doesn't have anything really that facilitates to scoring. And we've talked about he's not a scorer. That's fine. He still should be able to get you 10 points, get you 15 points on a given night. He has no ability to score in the post, to score at the rim, unless he's in transition. And the free throws, I mean, he's completely devolved as a free throw shooter. He's shooting, I think it's the second worst free throw percentage of all time during a playoff run for a single player. The only one being worse is Ben Wallace, I think it was.
I think he's actually moved to the bottom of that list now. I think it is the worst.
He's hitting like 32% of his free throws. He's missed 40-some free throws this playoffs alone. That's more than the Hawks, the Suns, and it was one other team. He's missed more free throws than three teams in the playoffs. That simply can't happen. It cannot happen. You can't be in your whatever year, fourth year, and just be a complete zero at the line. You can't. If you're not going to do it anywhere else, you just can't do it. I have a feeling, and you know, this is a question from our mailbag. I'll go to it right now, because we got to get into this. This is from Cameron. He asks, is Ben Simmons going to be back next year? I have a feeling if the Sixers lose this series, and even if they do manage to come back these last two games and get out of this series, I have a feeling that the Simmons and Embiid era is done after this year. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think this game, even if they're able to skate by and win the last two, I mean, the shit's already hit the fan in regards to this duo. Embiid had a more difficult time creating offense at the end of last night's game because Ben Simmons can't shoot. The Sixers also couldn't put the ball on Ben Simmons. And in a lot of cases, they couldn't put him on the court at all. They had to pull in Shake freaking Milton. Simmons being the Sixers' best playmaker, but also not being able to legitimately handle the ball in a tight situation, that nullifies the whole point of being a team's point guard. And we've known this with Simmons for a while. And there are several reasons outside of Simmons' control as to why the Sixers can't really create functional offense in the half court. One of them being they haven't really gotten a normal point guard other than freaking George Hill in the past few years. The other being that they chose between Simmons and Jimmy Butler at one point, which now there are definitely a lot of people who will point to that as a mistake of the franchise that will hurt them for years to come. But another one is that Simmons has not worked on these very obvious flaws, one of them being free throw shooting, another one being interior scoring. And the mid-range and three-point shooting in general are definitely things that he could have added to his game. I don't think they're as important as the ones that you pointed out, but just they were so obvious from like his 10th game in the league that he needed to work on these things. He just didn't. And this postseason has been an especially bad run for his free throw shooting. He has now missed more free throws in this one postseason run than Steve Nash did in his entire postseason career.
I saw that one.
That's fucking crazy, man.
The difference is Steve Nash shot like 660 free throws.
Yeah, 400. It was an insane amount of playoff games he played.
My question is, what does this guy work on in the offseason when he's in the gym? What does he work on? I mean, we've all seen the clips of him, you know, running five on fives where, you know, you get like maybe a jumper in there and everyone's like, oh shit, here comes jump shot Ben Simmons. What does he work on? None of what he's apparently trying to get better at in the offseason ever makes its way into a game. And especially not in the playoffs when it's most needed. He's devolved. He's gotten better, obviously, in some areas. He's become an all-world caliber defender. We know that. He's still a fantastic playmaker, and he's still fantastic in transition. But, I mean, Jared Dudley was right. In half court, he's – I don't even know if you can call him average on the offensive end. It's a disaster from him offensively. And I don't know if the Sixers can continue to try to make this work.
No, I think a trade's coming the offseason. The issue, which we'll have a whole offseason do this, so we don't have to get too into the nitty-gritty of potential trades, but every other team is watching this too. It's not like there might be one team that decides to buy in. It only takes one buyer to get a good trade package out of him, but the Sixers certainly are getting that shot creator that they've been looking for Simmons. It's just not happening. Because the thing is, any team that trades for Simmons will want like their shot creator to be paired with Ben Simmons, because that's actually kind of a good fit. And that's the other thing, is Simmons and Embiid have been looking for the same complementary skill sets. And granted, the Sixers haven't been able to acquire that guy properly or keep him around for more than a year. But Simmons also has been pretty adamant about being the point guard when he literally can't shoot. He doesn't make his free throws. All the things that everyone knows are out there. These are well-documented things, which makes it even more embarrassing that he hasn't worked on them. And I was a pretty big Ben Simmons defender for a while. I kind of became a centrist this year, especially when I put out that piece about how they needed to trade Simmons for Harden. I don't even know if that would work this year, honestly, because Harden has missed a lot of time. But this is a culmination of years of just the same player being available in the same ways and not being demonstrably better at any one thing over these past three postseasons. The first postseason against the Celtics, you could argue it's his first time, and he literally saw what a playoff-ready defense would do to him. They would just wall him off like Aaron Baines and Al Horford did. 2019 against the Raptors, it was kind of like, okay, well, they almost won, so there's only so much you can take away from that. And last year, he was hurt. This year, no fucking excuse, man. They're so much better than the Hawks. And it's not like the Hawks are even that good of a defense. Their best wing defender, DeAndre Hunter, hasn't played a game this series. Like, this isn't even a high-level defense, just completely taking him out of the game plan in the half court. And time again, Embiid has to be a panacea for fucking everybody, including Tobias Harris, including everybody else who played like dog shit this game. Embiid time and time again steps up and improves and changes his game when the team needs it to. Simmons has not.
He has not, and I don't know at this point in his career if it's safe to say that he will not. It's just a complete unwillingness to be a part of the offense, for me, is the most frustrating part of it. Like, Tobias had a really bad last two games. He started off hot in game five, and then he slowed down. I'm sorry, game four. Game five, he was horrendous. Okay, 2 of 11, 4 points. That's awful. We need Tobias there, and we'll get to Tobias. But Ben Simmons has multiple opportunities a game where he has a lane. He has the room to get a shot off at the rim, which is if he's going to take a shot, it's going to be at the rim. That's all he fucking does. He just doesn't. He just won't do it. And somebody asked him after last night about his performance at the free throw line. They said, are you just struggling mechanically or whatever they said, or is it something mental? And he went, it's definitely mental. It's definitely mental. Well, I believe him, but is that affecting him everywhere on the court? Like, he's so unwilling to even try to score. It's like the guy is petrified of failure. And for him, failure is missing one shot. It doesn't – I've argued for so long that you could win with Simmons and Embiid. And we've seen this season, you could win with Simmons and Embiid. They were, I think, including the last two games, they're 40-11 this season when the two of them play. You can win with them. The other guys on the team have to step up, and Ben Simmons has to play well too. He's played awfully. He's done – I mean, there was times where he didn't even look like he was the primary defender on Trae Young last night. They looked like they had dive on. But even the defense didn't work out. You know, that they held Trae Young to a whopping 39 points. At some point, like, we just have to be like, this can't work. I mean, we've seen it play out 3 years in a row now. Second round, we're done. No. The last 4 years, two second-round losses, and then maybe another one this year. I mean, at what point do we just say enough is enough? This isn't going to change. This isn't going to get any better. He's also eating up $180 million that the team desperately needs to pump elsewhere. I don't know where to go from here. I mean, this was such a feel-good season, the entire season. Even given everything that happened, this has been a pretty largely feel-good playoff run. Dominance from Joel Embiid, really solid play from Tobias Harris, really solid play from Seth Curry, who, by the way, is playing the best basketball of his career right now. 36 points, like I mentioned last night, is obscene. He was hitting everything. And this last two games, they've completely changed the whole narrative of this season. This season will not be remembered fondly now because of it. A season in which Joel Embiid finished second in MVP. Ben Simmons, second in DPOY voting. First team all defense. Joel Embiid, second team all NBA. This is just not going to be a season that is remembered anything like we expected it to be. I think it's likely going to be the season we remember as the final straw between the Simmons and Embiid pairing. And it's dare I say, the end of the process.
I think we have different definitions of the process, but we can, again, that's an offseason. No, you're cool.
But you tie it to the Simmons and Embiid pairing, and you have to see how it plays out, whatever. It's just, I mean, this looks like the beginning of the end for this current Sixers team as we know it.
Yeah, it does. And you know what's interesting is going into the season, one of the things that newly hired coach Doc Rivers was supposed to fix was Ben Simmons. He was supposed to be the guy who, as a former player, can talk to him more and, encourage him more to get better at the things that he's not as good at. And it just also to fix the bench units so that, like, the Sixers to get competent play behind Embiid, which individually from Dwight Howard, they did up until this series. So credit to that for whoever you want to give that to. But really, this is the same fucking team that these are the same problems that we've seen over the last several seasons with blowing leads. I mean, Doc Rivers was infamous for blowing leads before he got to the Sixers, but these two, I mean, this might be the worst one on his resume, this 26-point blow to the Hawks in 15 minutes. This just feels like they still can't create good offense in the half court when defense is center in. And, you know, that was defensible against, like, that Celtics team, which if they had a healthy Kyrie, they were probably going to the finals. And fucking the Raptors of 2019 won the championship. But against this Hawks team, man, come on. Like you got to give the Hawks their respect, but they were not a good defensive team.
You said it. They're probably the worst of the eight teams left in the playoffs. They were, in our eyes, you know, going into the series, we talked about it. We talked about how fortunate the Sixers were because they got the one seed and they were going to have an easy path to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know if it's a lack of effort, if it's the play calling, if it's the players just getting scared and hiding from the moment, but it took a really, really, really bad turn at the end of game four. And here we are. And, you know, A week ago, we were talking about our predictions for the Sixers-Nets series. And now we're here talking about the likely blow-up of this team. So moving to Tobias Harris, as you mentioned, Tobias Harris, 2 of 11 shooting, 4 points total. Simply cannot have that from your second/third option on offense. You can probably call him the third at this point with the way Seth is playing. My issue with how Tobias played is not as much on him as it is on Doc Rivers. Tobias obviously has to hit his shots. That you can't excuse that. But Tobias is the guy, we've talked about it with the bench units. When they have a bench unit in, they have to keep one of the starters in at all times. Tobias is usually that guy that's the fifth man on the floor. And it seemed that when he was on the floor with the bench unit, there was minimal plays being run through him. I mean, they weren't trying to get him the ball in the post. They weren't trying to free him up in space. They just didn't really look like they were trying to run any sort of offense. It looked almost as if Doc was leaning too heavily on the fact that the past few games, Sixers have had a bench guy get hot and just go off and kind of ad lib. It looked like that was the strategy. And they kind of went away from any sort of set offense when they were in the bench units. The bench offense on Wednesday night was horrendous. It was atrocious. They didn't run anything through Tobias. And when they did, he simply did not answer the call. And it's really tough to pick on Tobias because he has been the definition of consistency for this entire playoff run. But it's just another factor in what was an awful, awful game all around.
Yeah, this is a series where Tobias was supposed to feast. And granted, for the Wizards series and for the first few games of this series, he was doing that. He was feasting. And for some reason, the Sixers weren't unable to generate an offense that would make it easy for him. Part of that was the general lineup fixtures and combinations that Doc Rivers put out there. I'm not letting Doc off the hook yet. We can get back to him. But putting in Shake Milton, like granted he did hit that 1-3 at the mid-second quarter, which is very impressive. But other than that, man, he played like garbage for the first half, and Doc made no insinuation to sub in like Maxi or to tighten the rotation for the second half. He kept in a guy who was clearly not having a good night, and it cost the Sixers crucial minutes. Not being able to create a good lineup around Harris with the bench unit. I mean, he's a max player. He was a 20 point per game scorer like the whole season. Even last season when he was having a down year, he was still almost getting 20 points a game. And for some reason, this Sixers team against this Hawks team can't do that. I don't get it.
So what was your biggest gripe with Doc Rivers these past two games? And this leads us to another mailbag question. This is from T to the Train. What can Doc even possibly do to rectify the situation and win game six?
I will give him slack on the rotations issue to a degree, because the Sixers bench really isn't that deep. We've known that for a while. It's like average at best, definitely below average for a team that's made it this far. But for you to have a guy like Joel Embiid, who is a plus-minus monster, like literally when he's on the court, the Sixers just absolutely beat the crap out of teams, which was true for this entire series up until like the last 6 minutes last night. That was still the case. And Embiid units were still absolutely destroying opponents. For bench units in like a third of the time that Embiid's out there to just give it right back, that quickly is that was a problem in the Brett Brown era, and it's still a problem in the Doc Rivers era. I don't know how that's possible. I think part of it is the roster construction. Just they don't have a stretch five to pair with Ben Simmons that he can play with the bench unit, so you can stagger out Simmons and Beat. But part of it is just he was running the all bench units for a while. I think he ran it again last night at one point. Like, what the is that? Am I right on that?
I think there was one point where there was an all bench unit in. Yeah.
Jesus.
I it's okay. The Sixers got and Doc Rivers got bailed out immensely this series in multiple games because they had a bench guy catch fire, and it made the bench unit appear better than it is. There was Furkan, there was Shake in game two. Multiple times this series, one of the guys on the bench kind of caught fire and carried the entire unit. And that's what I'm saying. You know, when they had the bench unit in with Tobias this last night's game, it looked like that was the strategy. Was, okay, George Hill, maybe it's your turn tonight. It's your turn to start going off. That's not a strategy. That's not – you can't bank on that happening.
George Hill has also stunk these past few games.
He made us look like assholes. We talked about his playoff pedigree and his been there, done that-ness and his ability to assimilate into any lineup you put him in. And, man, that dude has been a bum on the floor. Shout out to Dwight Howard, though, because Dwight Howard has been having a pretty good series. But it's just – there's very little positional depth at this point. And, you know, guys that look like they should fit together on the floor just have not been. And it shows mightily when the Sixers have to go to that bench unit.
Yeah, and this is – I mean, a lot of it is this is just a flawed roster that Daryl Morey kind of took in, inherited, and tried to make better on the margins throughout the season and in the offseason, which Seth Curry trade, major hit. Al Horford trade for Danny Green, obviously major hit. Not having Danny Green for these last two games definitely doesn't help. That makes the rotations a lot harder to figure out because Danny is literally a definition of plug and play. You can put it with any combination. He makes it look fine, I guess. But yeah, these flaws start from the top when your best two and sometimes like last night, three players can't work together. It makes it a lot harder to build other kinds of lineups throughout the course of the game that makes sense. Simmons and Embiid are not the ideal pairing, but they also are forced to play together because Simmons can't play with Dwight Howard because he can't fucking shoot. So it's just there's just a domino effect of things that partially I do hold against Doc Rivers because there are still better ways to handle those situations. But part of it, you can't because the roster really, it's just imbalanced. It's not a normal roster. It never has been in this whole era. That's been a problem since Simmons and Embiid were rookies. But another thing is Rivers really hasn't made too many good adjustments in this series. It took him a whole half to realize Danny Green wasn't the answer to guard Trae Young. And that was a half too late because despite the Sixers' immense efforts at the end of game one, they couldn't win because they were down too much early. That's a microcosm of all kinds of adjustments that Doc Rivers could have made. He could have put Simmons at the five because Dwight Howard last night was a minus 14 in like 8 minutes or something. That can't happen.
Alec, I have two questions for you. This first one is from Birdo Joe. They kind of play into each other. And then the second one is from Isaiah. First one from Birdo Joe. He says, where did the good times go? And then Isaiah says, are we cursed? So your thoughts.
Where did the good times go? Basically, they went with having such a good storybook season, regular season. That's where the good times are. You can go back and relish in those because they're gone now. As for what was the second question? I'm sorry.
Are we cursed?
No, we are not cursed. When you drafted Embiid, you knew he was an injury risk. So him getting injured, actually, I think that him, I mean, considering all the other injuries and mishaps that have happened to other players in this general season, which has been a pretty horrific season for player health, Embiid's actually done pretty okay, I'd say, relative to the rest of the crowd. I think he's been fine there. No, I think this is a structural problem with, like, the Simmons-Embiid pairing and not being able to find another perimeter creator somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you can really tell that Twitter and Sixers fans were in a really, really tough spot this past 24 hours when even I had replied to our mailbag tweet with the question of when does the pain end. this has been a really, really tough two games for us as fans of this team. If you could sum up these last two games in a word or a phrase or something, what would you say?
Laid off the gas, let them off easy. Something like that. They had the Hawks. This series was over midway through game four. They fucking had them and they just blew it. They let the Hawks back into it just like they did in game one. I'm sorry.
You're right though. It's a complete embarrassment. I mean, this is, like we said in the onset of the episode, this is one of the worst playoff losses we've seen in the history of professional sports, at least in our lifetimes. Combine that with what they did in game four. This is the series should be over. We should be done. They should have extra time off waiting for the Nets and Bucks series to end. We should be done. And instead we're a game away from losing in six games. It's embarrassing. And I stand by my opinion that even if they do get out of this series, unless they somehow manage to win the NBA finals, I think we are in for a major, major overhaul of this roster and its stars.
Oh, I agree. I think Simmons' time here is as good as gone, unless somehow Embiid demands a trade and the Sixers can't get the good enough value for Simmons to where maybe that's on the table. But I don't think that's on the table. I don't think anyone who runs a basketball team would put that on the table. Definitely not Morey either.
God, I hope.
In the realm of possibilities, it's there somewhere. It's just not one that really should be considered. But yeah, the Simmons trades we'll have to get to. We'll have an entire offseason talk about those. But I totally agree. I think the bet's already made. This pairing clearly doesn't work, and it didn't work for years. And the Ben Simmons haters from day one, the WIP-esque radio callers who, you know, just said because he shoots weird that he's not good. Take your victory laps now.
You won. It really has been insane how fast it went. Boom. Everybody's done with this guy. He was already an incredibly polarizing figure in the sport of basketball, but especially in Philadelphia. But there was a lot of people, you know, you and I included, there's a lot of people that saw past his flaws and, you know, saw his value as a basketball player and were consistently defending him. And I'm not blaming those people for doing that. I was one of those people. But, man, over the course of two games, it has immediately shifted to where everybody is kind of, you know, the curtain has been lifted on this guy. And you know, I don't think there's really a chance that he can win back this city. Unless maybe he comes out and breaks the record for three-pointers in a playoff game, that would certainly shift the perception. Man, just a disastrous two games.
Look, we all knew that eventually at some point in the high-level playoff series, Ben Simmons was going to be mitigated. We all saw this coming because we've seen this story before, and nothing from the regular season told us that something different was coming. Nothing told us that he was randomly going to start hitting threes in the playoffs or make free throws effectively. But what most of us didn't expect is for, A, it to come as early as the Hawks series. Because, again, props to the Hawks for coming back in both of these very admirable victories for them. But they are not that good. And so for the Sixers to not be able to – for him to not be able to generate good offense against this team, especially when DeAndre Hunter's out, just like the same thing for Tobias Harris, he should be also attacking those mismatches. And he just plain old didn't. For it to come this early and this bad, like for it to look this bad to where he's hitting like 30% of his free throws, it's just, this is the pinnacle, or I guess you could call it the lowest point if you want. It's the peak or the valley of this entire Ben Simmons experience. Yeah. And I don't think he can rebound either. And I don't think his agents will want him to. He's a clutch client. I don't think they'll want anything to do with this city after this.
So like we said, The series is 3-2, going back to Atlanta. The Sixers, to avoid the third second-round elimination in the last 4 years, have to win the next two games, and they find themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals. What do they have to do to make that happen and to right this ship, I'll say with air quotes, and get past this Hawks team?
Embiid has to be excellent for every minute he's on the court. Last night he was not as excellent towards the end of the game, and it hurt the Sixers. Unfortunately, this is the reality that we knew going into the playoffs, basically, but he's going to have to be Superman the whole postseason. He's going to have a Hall of Fame type postseason. We didn't expect him to have to do it this early, but it's go time. It's all Embiid now. And if he doesn't have it like he did in game four, you got to figure something out. Tobias Harris should have a mismatch. Somebody should have a mismatch. Seth Curry might still be hot. Apparently he's the perimeter shot creator we've all been waiting for. It should not be this hard, especially if Embiid is anything close to like 90%. They should be able to figure it out.
You know what's crazy? And this is a very like blanket statement, and there's obviously a lot of stuff going into this. But over the course of the next two games, is it crazy to say that if Simmons scored like 13 points, they probably win the game, whatever game we're talking about?
Like he missed 10 free throws last night. They lost by 3. You could do that math. Anyone can do that.
He missed a wide open dunk. I think Dwight missed a dunk too. The Sixers missed 2 wide open dunks last night in a game they lost by 3. They had like one field goal in the last 7 minutes. We're going backwards now, but God damn, what a fucking era of Sixers basketball we are living through. I mean, the only thing left to say is Sixers and 7. There's nothing else we can even try to feign excitement about at this point.
And they have pretty short odds to do that too. It's like plus 130.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They, you know, like we said, they're the superior team far and away. They were the superior team for, you know, all but 15 minutes last night. It's just, man, they just simply can't do what they did. I'm done talking about this team. What else do you have about the Sixers, if anything?
Well, I did just check my phone because I knew that the all-rookie teams were coming out today. Tyrese Maxey did not make it, but Paul Reed did. No, I'm just kidding. Tyrese Maxey probably barely missed the cut, if I had to guess. The first team was LaMelo, who won Rookie of the Year last night, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Haliburton, Sadiq Bey from Villanova, and Jae'Sean Tate, who had a pretty good up-and-coming season for the Rockets. And second team, Emmanuel Quickley, who was Tyrese Maxey's teammate at Kentucky. They actually have pretty similar games. Quickley's just a better shooter. Desmond Bane from the Grizzlies, Isaiah Stewart from the Pistons, Isaac Okoro, who he was good, but he was kind of a late bloomer, and Patrick Williams for the Bulls. None of those names are Tyrese Maxey, Isaiah Joe, or Paul Reed, unfortunately.
The majority of those players play for teams, with the exception of at least Quickley, I know offhand. Most of them did not play for playoff teams. Or competing teams, really. I think that probably has something to do with it. They had significantly more minutes than Maxey. They played larger roles than Maxey did. And there was a period of time where Maxey did not see the floor in the middle of the season. So, yeah, it's disappointing, but it also really doesn't mean anything. I still think Tyrese Maxey is a top 3 player in that draft. I don't think that's super outlandish of a take. I think the only ones that you can say – are better than him now are LaMelo and Anthony Edwards and maybe Tyrese Haliburton. But I don't – I mean, I would
also take Sadiq Bey over him right now.
Right, but over the course of the next few years, what do you think?
Probably Maxey, especially for this team, considering its needs.
I mean, I think he's going to be easily one of the best players in this draft. The Phillies wore their red uniforms for the first time since 2017, and they won. That was awesome. The title of this podcast is going to be We Have Always Been a Phillies Podcast. But yeah, the Phillies wear their red uniforms, beat Clayton Kershaw. Rhys Hoskins hits a home run to end like an 0-for-32 streak. I do have a Phillies mailbag question here. And honestly, it's like a borderline offensive question to me.
Yeah, I was pretty annoyed when I saw this.
No, I'm not annoyed because it's a good question, but it's like painful to read it. This is from Fitz at Pittsburgh. Shout out to Fitz. What kind of return does a peaking Zach Wheeler fetch at the deadline without eating any money left on his contract?
I mean, I think you're better equipped to answer this question than me, but first of all, the Phillies would eat money for the most part, I would imagine.
I don't think they would. The way he's pitching right now, he has the third highest F war in the entire National League. I don't think they would eat any of his contract. I think he fetches a top 10 prospect in baseball from a competing team. But I don't think I would trade him. I mean, I definitely wouldn't trade him. I don't know. There's no think about it. I definitely wouldn't trade him. I wouldn't trade him for Babe Ruth, as Johnny Middleton said. But yeah, that's just such an awful reality to think about.
Especially after waking up this morning and just not wanting to exist. And that I figured the mailbag would be somewhat depressing, but that question coming up, I almost took offense to.
That was a tough one. But you know what? We'll always answer the tough questions here. No, yeah, so I was watching the Phillies last night, and it felt like I was, you know, walking through a minefield because I was already extremely emotionally volatile as a result of the Sixers game. And I'd had a few beverages, so I was in a passionate place, we'll say. And watching the Phillies, you know, it's 2-0, right, against the Dodgers. And Wheeler had come out, and Alvarado comes in, and I'm like, God, do I really need to do this to myself tonight? Am I really going to watch this team blow it after what we just witnessed with the Sixers? Alvarado has a almost immaculate inning. He struck out the side. And then Neris comes in for the save. Gets two outs, I think. No. Like, hits the first bat. Yeah, hits the first batter, rolls a double play, hits the next batter. And then gets a pop out, I think it was. So they did win, but I was like, God damn, like, is it worth it? Like, do I need to see this happen in person? But gladly, they did end up winning the game. So they're undefeated in the red jerseys this year.
That's a plus.
Did you see the thing where it was the last time they had worn the red jerseys was in 2017? And it was a game in which JT Realmuto hit a walk-off – not a walk-off, hit an inside-the-park home run against them.
I did not see that stat, but that checks out.
It was phenomenal. The video was awesome. It was 2017. The Phillies were wearing their red uniforms, and this is when JT was still on the Marlins. He hits a ball off of the wall in left center, and it kicks away, and he gets into the park. And that was – prior to last night, that was the last time they wore the red. So – like I said, we've always been a baseball podcast, so I'm glad we touched on the
field. That's correct.
I got nothing else. The Phillies talk cheered me up slightly at the end there, but, you know, it is.
I do have one question I want to ask, but it would bring back the pain. So if you want me to hold off, I could do that.
No, go ahead. Ask it.
Is this worse than this loss? Is it worse than a few episodes ago? We were asked like the most painful losses in our time as fans. Oh, and your answer was the Howard Achilles tear. Another one I could bring up, which is a little bit before our time, is the Rondé Barber interception against Eagles Bucks, like 03, which we weren't really around for, but that was pretty painful.
So is it, oh goodness. I'm going to say it's not – I don't think it's worse than the Ryan Howard loss because that was, like, truly the end of an era that was the most successful era in the history of the franchise. the Phillies franchise. This era has obviously been good for the Sixers, but like we said, they haven't gotten past the second round. There's largely been little success to speak of. And plus, it ended with one of the most devastating injuries to a franchise cornerstone that really sent them into a decade plus of purgatory. So I would still go with the Howard Achilles tear.
That's fair. I probably would too. My guess is that the Sixers will be back in some bigger, better form in the near future that we can all get happy about.
As long as the Sixers have Joel Embiid on their team, they're going to be one of the top teams in the league. I would bet my life on that. He is, you know, even when he's, you know, like the end of the game last night, he was struggling and he was gassed, and you could tell. Even with that, you know, his recent playoff performances, aside from game four, he's playing like the best player in the world. And, you know, he deserves more from this team, certainly. So let's just hope they figure it out for game six and seven and they give it to him. That's going to do it for me. What about you? You got anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you guys again for tuning in. Episode 31, probably the most distraught episode we've had. Almost definitely, actually. I am going away for 10 days. I'll actually be in enemy territory. I'll be in Utah. So not sure when we will talk to you guys next. We'll figure something out. We'll put something out on the Twitter. Let you guys know what to expect. But I hope the next time we talk to you, we are preparing for the Eastern Conference Finals. Alec, give me something as we send them off into the week.
Well, last episode I thought was going to be the Seth Curry episode because it was episode 30, and I misinterpreted because actually Furkan Korkmaz is number 30, so that makes me look even worse. But Seth Curry stepped up again last game, so this actually can still be the Seth Curry episode. So a rebound completely accidental.
We finally got the better brother in Philadelphia. What a time to be alive. Folks, that's going to do it for us. Sixers in seven? See you guys. We'll talk to you soon.